Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, changing the way we think about and experience the world. And this is April 7th, 2017. Now, I share this spot with Mark Husson and his One Too Many Voices show. And usually I take the first and the third Fridays of the month, and Mark takes the second and the fourth. But there was a little mix-up this week, and I think it's probably because there were five Fridays in March. So I actually did an extra show last week. And, of course, we didn't do it on A Course in Miracles. We did it on the medical assistance program. But in any case, because I took the show last week, we got a little mixed up about whose turn it was. So I know if you've heard an announcement that Mark was going to be on the air today, he's going to be on the air next week. This week, it's my turn to talk, and we're talking about A Course in Miracles. And so I hope that even if you did, you know, tune in to hear Mark, that you'll stick with us. And if you're interested at all or you're studying A Course in Miracles, I hope you'll stick around with us. So on today's show, we will be discussing one of the sections of the textbook. Specifically in Chapter 16, we're going to talk about the illusion and the reality of love, which is Section 4, and then also Section 5, which is the choice for completion. And when I say we, it's because my friend Bruce Rawls is with me today. And also, I just, true confessions or something. If I seem a little rattled, it's because there's a major storm going on the West Coast, and that's where Bruce is. So we were a little frantic about trying to get Bruce actually on the air today. And I told him I'm just kind of like going in all different directions thinking, okay, if we can't get Bruce, do we postpone the show? Do we go in another direction, et cetera? And for those of you who follow astrology, see, we don't even have a Mercury retrograde yet. And this seems like one of those situations where we were looking for plan B. So that just, let that be a lesson to you. You know, there's lots of situations in which we're looking for plan B. So while we're talking today, I hope you will join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room. And of course, you can do that by going over to our, actually it's on Facebook, and many of you know how to get there already. But if you don't, if this is new to you, then you go to 1-2radio.com. And you click on that link that says chat. And when you do that, then you'll automatically be redirected over to Facebook where you can ask to join the group. So I see a number of people already there. Thanks for being here, Lynn and Jan and Chris and Renee. It's good to see you this morning. So thanks for joining us over there. So without any further ado, let's get Bruce on the show. And many of you know Bruce because he's joined me many times before. And he's just a wealth of knowledge, great sense of humor, and just always, you know, entices me with new information. So, Bruce, thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Sia. Thanks for the nice acknowledgments, and I'll try to live up to that.
Okay.
I always have fun on your show, so I always look forward to these conversations. So it's always a welcome opportunity to be on your show. And it seems like we have a great topic to go over. And since you mentioned that, you know, we had currently here on the Oregon coast, central coast of Oregon, we've got a little power failure this morning. So that was the aforementioned scramble factor. So I actually left my phone off for half an hour to hopefully save enough battery power. So if I disappear suddenly, it won't be because of anything personal. It'll be because my phone battery just decided to call it a day or whatever. But I think I've got enough juice for the hour. So anyway, so thank you. And the section that the reason I brought this up is I have several different weekly things I attend online, and one of them is an online study group on Wednesday evenings. And we just read this the other evening. I was like, wow, did they rewrite all this?
Yeah.
I know C and I talked in an email conversation about how when you find something that has tremendous insight and depth to it, and like A Course in Miracles has on literally every sentence, if you're looking for it, when you go back, you know, a year or a month or a decade later and reread, it's like, my gosh, was that in there before? I don't remember that. And that was the case with me when rereading this the other evening. So I thought, well, maybe this would be helpful to anyone else who might be listening as well. And certainly for me to reread it and to go through it again. And the whole idea, of course, of the illusion, the reality of love, is that anything that, according to A Course in Miracles, has to do with change or differences or duality would have to be the illusion of love. And so that's the whole basis of what we call the special love and special hate relationships, which, again, this beautiful non-dual metaphysical doctrine suggests that are really the same thing, two sides of the same coin, but we see them as different. We see them as being, vastly different. But the whole idea of special love or special hate is it something that we have identified with and attached and appendaged our peace of mind to that can come and go, whether it's, let's just say, pick one out of a hat, electrical grid power, as just sort of a random example, you know. So we can have a special relationship to that. We can have a mm-hmm. special relationship to financial situations such as, a source of income or livelihood. We can have a special relationship to the people in our lives that we call our spouses, family members, coworkers. I mean, the list goes on and on. So just about anything, the weather, I mean, we could have a special relationship to, it rained on the day I wanted to do things outdoors or whatever. So it's kind of an opportunity to look at everything through new eyes, so to speak, and see that we can look at our investment in our peace of mind and how it's attached to or appendaged to specifics, the whole world of specifics, because anything that really is based on space and time and not on the eternal and infinite that we really are, that we, have masked over with all of our persona stuff, is subject to change and ultimately never will make us happy. And I think that's why oftentimes I'm drawn to that section called the real alternative in chapter 31. But we've talked about that before. But I think, sometimes we have to look at all the different flavors of our special relationships, both special love and special hate relationships, the attachments and the aversions and the infatuations and the hatreds, if you will, of things that come and go in the world, and see how those investments in our identity work against our peace. So this section starts up, be not afraid to look upon the special hate relationship, for freedom lies in looking at it. So there's a clue right there. All we have to do is look. And a favorite teacher of both CA and myself is Ken Wapnick, who is probably the foremost scholar in many respects on A Course in Miracles, and certainly the most prolific author and speaker and proponent of the non-dual metaphysics in terms of a teaching situation anyway. And one of the things he says is, you just have to look at the ego without condemnation. We have to look at the seemingly separate self that we made up, that we're so invested in. And it takes a while. I mean, it might take lifetimes. But if the end result is a piece that can never change, wouldn't that be worth it? So that's the big question, I think, is being asked at every turn in this curriculum. So it continues. It says, it would be impossible not to know the meaning of love except for this. For the special love relationship in which the meaning of love is hidden is undertaken solely to offset the hate, but not to let it go.
So well, and what a great line. Oh, yeah, it's huge.
Isn't that potent? Because that basically gives us a way of looking without condemnation at the underpinnings and the behind the scenes, machinery of our unconscious mind, and see how we set up all those infatuations and the relationships with people and places and things and circumstances that we know are going to disappoint us. We basically self-sabotage our peace of mind by, from the get-go, setting up situations that we know on some level or another are going to never satisfy or basically disappoint us. And so that sentence, I think, says it all, doesn't it? It says the special love relationship in which the meaning of love is hidden is undertaken solely to offset the hate but not to let it go. So, in other words, if we had a peace that was so all-encompassing and so unchangeable in our minds at all times, why would we even bother investing our attention and our mental energies, if you will, on anything that could change? But it's only because we think that we're getting some kind of temporary fix, kind of like an addict, you know, is looking at the next hit of whatever, that we think that maybe there's some going to be enough payoff to keep us going. And it's always this on again, off again scenario that characterizes our ego search for happiness, which ultimately is fruitless, but seems to have moments of euphoria but they come and go, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think this line is so incredible because it brings to our attention something that I think we don't ever want to look at, which is it says you're trying to deny the hate or you're trying to drive it underground, but your intention is never to let it go.
You know? Right.
And it's like, bingo. You know, that's like one of those startling kind of comments that we think we can, you know, it's like we're trying to dress it up. We're trying to put frosting on it. We're trying to, you know, if I can only, well, and you know, and once again, understanding that that's such a drive of our relationships. I mean, I know that it can sound pretty callous of me, but we have special relationships because we're trying to make ourselves special. We're trying to keep, you know, keep trying to buoy up this ego. And if I can just get enough people to meet my needs, if I can get enough people to love me or to say they like me or to appreciate me, you know, to give me enough stars, whatever it is, then I can deny all the rest of this stuff. But ultimately, we're not really addressing what the real issue is, which is that feeling of separation, that feeling of having a hole in our gut or just having a hole in our lives. And, you know, just this idea that we can keep hating, we can keep excluding, we can keep that as long as we just cover it up with love with these other relationships. I mean, all these other people love me, so I can just forget the rest of it.
Right, exactly. And I think that it kind of dives deep into one of the core ideas in A Course in Miracles, in that on an unconscious level, we feel complicit, and in a sense, we completely are, for having in our minds only and in a delusional, fragmented dreaming portion of our mind, we appear to have pulled off this cosmic crime of making separation real. We appear to have made up a whole realm of thought and a world to go with it, you know, the matching outfit, if you will, for an insane thought system that is disguised as a cosmos, you know, a whole space-time matter energy universe that seems to reinforce at every turn the idea of scarcity and separation and incompletion and lack and emptiness and, you know, despair. The list could go on and on of it. Nouns and adjectives we could throw at us that aptly describe the ego's less than stellar performance in delivering us peace. So if we just, like you say, if we are willing to look at the fact that this is a cover up and this is designed to, Our infatuations and our special love relationships with whether it's a food or a substance or a TV show or a particular geography or, again, it can be just about anything that is specific or delineated in terms of some kind of space or time or individuality. That whole notion then, when we call that into question, we go past the denial on one level, and which is the special love, and we have to go through the special love to get to the special hate, which is really also equally unfounded, but we don't see that until we look at it. And beyond that is the real love, the capital L love, that of course, in just about every section, you know, it starts out with, the most kind-hearted, parody, lampooning, if you will, of the ego. I was thinking about that since Don Rickles passed on yesterday. So Jesus of A Course in Miracles is sort of like the ultimately kind, the infinitely kind version of, you know, a comic who makes fun, but in the gentlest of ways, of our investment in our ego. And that's kind of what he does almost in every section of this wonderful book. And he says, well, if you really look at it, this isn't working that great for you. But the good news is, you know, don't despair, because the reality that is beyond that, that drew you to exploring the idea that there must be a better way in the first place, is that the reality that we all share is one of perfect oneness, perfect peace, perfect innocence, and a joy that is so incomprehensible that we only get little tiny shadows of glimpses of it. But there's, I think, an intrinsic knowingness that we all have, no matter how deeply buried, that is there waiting for us. And that's, I think, what is the love between the words and between the lines of A Course in Miracles and in any great spiritual work that reminds us that our essence is one, our true nature is eternal and unlimited and has nothing to do with the special, the partial and incomplete relationships we have that are ultimately unfulfilling with specifics. And why, that's why specific and special, I think, are the same root, you know, that as long as we have something that delineates something from something else, that's a clue that it could be you may be a special relationship person if you have such and such, right?
Right. Well, and the other thing, the reason I was glad that we brought this up is because so often if we're talking about special relationships, now unless somebody's a course student, if they are, they understand the difference. But if you start talking about special love and special hate, you know, people are like, what? You know, where are you going with this?
Yeah.
And,
good
but
point,
I think, but I think what is so cool, or I don't know if it's cool, but what I think is so enlightening about this too, is that special love almost ultimately turns into special hate.
Right.
And in fact, one of the paragraphs, and I'll read it in this, just a couple paragraphs down, it talks about it. It says, the special love relationship is an attempt to limit the destructive effects of hate by finding a haven in the storm of guilt. Now, you must resonate with that, being in the middle of a storm, Bruce. It makes no attempt to rise above the storm into the sunlight. On the contrary, it emphasizes the guilt outside the haven by attempting to build barricades against it and keep within them. The special love relationship is not perceived as a value in itself, but as a place of safety from which hatred is split off and kept apart. The special love partner is acceptable only as long as he serves this purpose. Hatred can enter and indeed is welcome in some aspects of the relationship, but it is still held together by the illusion of love. If the illusion goes, the relationship is broken or becomes unsatisfying on the grounds of disillusionment. And you know, every single person, there is nobody on this planet who hasn't broken up with a love partner and realize that special love can easily turn to love, you know, to special hate. Or
exactly.
You know, you're on the playground and, you know, your best friend does something and all of a sudden now they're your enemy. I mean, we have made this into an art form, really, of identifying people who will, you know, and I love this idea, this visual of they keep us safe in the storm because the world is, you know, a crappy place out there. And so if we can get these friends or we can get these family members, we can get these special love relationships, they're going to protect us at least temporarily from any kind of knowledge of what else is out there or what we think is out there. But if they don't live it, you know, up to what we want them to do, if they don't live up to the expectations, the minute they let us down, then we push them outside the barricade as well.
Right, exactly.
You know?
So I call it the lambscape and the goatscape, you know, and anything inside the circle of our special love is the lambscape and welcomed and cherished and honored and adored. And anything else outside that circle is the goatscape. And those are the wicked and evil ones that we despise and detest, even if we're not consciously aware of it. Any kind of a subtle or not so subtle relationship that we have in our mind to any, you know, person, place, thing, whatever, a group of people or you know, whatever, is a way of maintaining duality and therefore separation and therefore keeping us from the peace that is beyond that. And that's where I think you know, the next paragraph, you know, basically says, well, yeah, this is pretty, you know, the previous paragraph says, you know, this is, if you look at the ego, it's a pretty disgusting, banal, and really horrific, insane thought system. But it has to be looked at and not condemned, but just realize, wow, you know, if we look at anyone from the eyes of that compassion, of seeing why thinking that that's the only alternative there is just, you know, one unsatisfying aspect of illusion for another, you can understand the frantic and frenetic and you know, desperate approaches that the ego tries, and always unsuccessfully, even though there appear to be momentary and brief, you know, victories of the little s self over other little s selves, they're all short-lived, because ultimately the special love of victory, or the special love of some sort of a physical or material attainment, is broken and dashed on the rocks of the reality that this isn't going to last, you know. And like you say, it's a very empty, unsatisfying, hollow kind of feeling when we look at that. But if we're looking at it from the ego, from the perspective of what we really are, and I think that's the nurturing that is requested in this curriculum, is to cultivate an awareness of an identity that has no vested interest in any particular outcome, any particular relationship, and sees that everything is, you know, is deserving of gratitude for the gift that it represents to our mind, to get back in touch with the unconscious, heal the unconscious pain and suffering and guilt and anguish there over believing that, you know, that we've shattered perfect oneness, and say, hey, that's just silly. You know, it's not evil, sinful, or wicked. It's just silly. And beyond that is the real love. And that's where this next paragraph, fourth paragraph on page 338, if you have a hard copy of the book, says, love is not an illusion. It is a fact. Where disillusionment is possible, there was not love, but hate. For hate is an illusion, and what can change was never love. So basically, it's telling us, and in so many cases with counterexamples, that what's real doesn't have any of those properties of change. So the reality of what we are, that is so inexorably drawing us back to itself at every moment in eternity, every little holy instant, if you will, we have those glimpses or opportunities to recognize those glimpses, that there's, you know, I could choose peace instead of this. I could see right now, this moment, a peaceful interpretation if I was willing to just, you know, just watch the ego mind and not condemn it. And then as that investment subsides, the love behind it then, you know, grows in prominence and appears to be brighter and more evident.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a few paragraphs later, there's a line that I think about a lot from the course. I mean, it just stands out in my mind that is once again so important, because I think sometimes as we're going back and forth, this is an illusion, that is an illusion, and it can get kind of confusing. But this says, your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. And once again, to me, that is such an incredible visual, because love, as you said, true love never changes. It's unchangeable. It's unflappable. But we substitute all these other things and call it love. You know, we make up all these definitions. We make up all this stuff. But just that idea that, you know, if you let it all go, if you let it all go down to bare bones, if you remove all those barriers that you put up against love, that's all that's left. And you don't have to look for it, because it never went anywhere.
Where would it go?
Yeah, it never went anywhere.
where would something that includes and is everything throughout and beyond space and time, and really outside of space and time, where could it go? And if we're it, if that's really the essence of what we are in spirit, in truth, in reality, then what would change? Where would it go? It doesn't go anywhere. And that's the love that's behind the capital L love, the real love that is behind the fake love, the ego's, you know, dysfunctional substitute for love, which is really the infatuation or the attachment or the manipulation of trying to eke out some kind of pleasure or or satisfaction out of, making the world work on its own terms kind of thing. And there's nothing wrong with doing any of those things and doing the everyday household or work related or whatever, chores on our to-do list. But we could do all those things, can be sort of a chew gum and walk exercise. We can actually go through the motions of doing all those things and do them with an attitude and awareness that, the outcome of all the things we're doing is not going to either make or break our happiness or our peace of mind or our sense of perfect innocence we never left. And we can use the feedback we get from all the people and all the circumstances as a reminder to look at our mind. So if there's anything that's still, unpleasant or uncomfortable or in any way fearful or, angering, that's a perfect opportunity to look at those experiences as symbols and see that we've made an illusion real in our mind. We've made something that can never really fulfill us into something that either has the power to make us happy, which is the special love, or to make us sad, which is the special hate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, like you say, that again is one of the sentences I have heavily underlined in this section too, because to seek and find all the barriers within ourselves that we've made against the real love is the only thing we need to do, because the real love is waiting there patiently, eternally, for us to return to it.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I'd say, kind of bringing it back to practical, and which is what you were just doing, because I tend to go very airy-fairy, but just on an everyday basis, I mean, like one of my thoughts immediately is, well, how do I seek for the barriers? What are they? What do they look like? How do I recognize one? And mm-hmm. a lot of that goes back to what we talk about in the course, is just go inside to your inner guide and teacher and just say, I need help. I don't recognize this, or I need your help in understanding what's going on here. Because like in that same paragraph where it says your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek for all the barriers, it also says any attempt to escape from one illusion into another must fail. And I find, at least for me, that's what I'm constantly doing. I think I can just trade one thing for another, and especially on the level of if we think something is good or holy or spiritual or loving, then we think that is truth, when in reality, a lot of times that's just one more illusion. We're just trading one illusion for another illusion.
Right, exactly. And a phrase that I find helpful is when I'm mindful, okay, there I was again, trying to, make one illusion work when another one failed. But illusion A equals illusion in truth. Illusion A equals illusion B equals illusion C ad infinitum, because all illusions are the same.
Right.
A dream is a dream is a dream. An illusion is an illusion is an illusion. And none of those are going to truly satisfy. Now, having said that, we can talk about, we have the whole realm of magical thinking and things that we do for our health and for our finances and for our relationships and all the actions in the world of form that we think are going to make us happy. There's nothing wrong with doing anything, because if the entire, cosmos that as we think of it is a projection of our mind, then it's not going to change the thinking. But if it helps us in our gradual release from the fear of and looking, seeking and finding the barriers, to gently release those fears and unconscious guilts and disturbing ideas that we think we pulled off some kind of cosmic crime, then there's nothing wrong with those things. And in fact, it's probably silly not to do the things that we think will make our lives in the world better. But we can do it with an attitude of recognizing that every opportunity is every moment is an opportunity to look at our minds and to see which teacher we've chosen, to see, am I at peace or am I allowing myself to be upset by what appears to be going on around me as a cause, but it's really just a reflection of what happened in my mind, and I'm getting the playback now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is an excellent point, because, it's what Ken used to call preferences. It's perfectly okay to have preferences. I mean, like, for instance, this is really simple, but, you know, if I offer you ice cream and I say I've got vanilla and chocolate and strawberry, well, they're all ice cream. They're, you know, one's not inherently better than the other one. They're all the same. Yeah. But you have a preference. And so if you say, I want to make my life happier and better because I want to choose the chocolate or I want to choose the vanilla, then what does it matter? That is simply your preference. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I have a preference, which is I love studying astrology. It makes my life more fun. It's a preference, you know? Mm-hmm. And as many people know, I've said this many times. When I first started studying the course, I'm obsessive compulsive, I think. So I just kind of like, boom, you know, that's all I did night and day was study the course. And I literally stopped doing astrology for about a year. I mean, I gave away every single one of my astrology books and I just thought, what's the point? It's an illusion. What's the point? And I mean, that is how I felt. Now, I think on one hand, maybe I needed to do that because, like I said, all I was doing was studying the course. I mean, I was just totally absorbed and obsessed with it. However, after about a year, what I realized is it's not like some spaceship is going to come and take you away. And I thought, I really like astrology. I have fun with astrology. I love tarot. It's fun. And it is still one more illusion, but it's like the chocolate ice cream. It was making my life happy. And so I think I just one day said, hey, it's okay for you to do astrology. Just because it's an illusion doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. Doesn't mean you can't do this. And so I slowly started getting the books back and doing the charts and doing the whole thing. And, But that was a very striking thing to me that at first I was throwing it all out going, they're all illusions. They're all illusions until I woke up and said, yeah, they're all illusions, but you get to choose and exactly. It's okay. But, it's okay. Yeah. You don't have to kind of just sit in a dark room and go, this whole thing is an illusion. So I'm not going to make a move.
Yeah. You know? I think that ties in beautifully. Yeah. I completely get that. And I think it ties in beautifully with the section of the manual for teachers, you know, that says, you know, our changes required in the lives of God's teachers, which of course we all are. And the instant we recognize that there's a better way, we're all teaching our minds by, you know, essentially letting the ego teacher go and firing that teacher. And the specific example that comes to mind for me is I have in addition to ACIM blog, I also have a website called geometrycode.com and I have fun finding things that are geometric, that are symbolic of either the thought system of inclusion or exclusion. And I try to tie it into that because I think that's where it becomes most helpful. But I still have a blast, you know, looking at different ways that things like platonic solids and polyhedra show up and everything from microbiology to cosmology. And you know, it's fascinating to see how elaborate, you know, these metaphors can become. And it's also, I think, a testament to the power of our mind to create just unbelievable things, pun intended or double meaning intended.
Yeah. Unbelievable,
because it really is interesting, and it gives us an opportunity to see the depth and breadth and the lengths that we will go to not only use the specifics that we made as an escape from reality, but also it can be an opportunity to look at how we can turn it around and use everything for a way to undo the belief in separation. And then the creativity in that, I think, is amazing because, you know, we can, you know, when we look at the guidance that we get from our inner kindness teacher and see that, yeah, you know, the optimum thing to do on the level of form would be to take or not take certain vitamins or see or not see certain practitioners or, you know, whether it's someone that does astrology charts or tarot or whatever, or whether it's, you know, a traditional medical doctor or a counselor or a financial planner or, you know, whatever, you know, it really doesn't matter the specific, because we can use every specific as a way to go beyond the substitutes. In paragraph 8, it says the special love relationship is but a shabby substitute for what makes you whole in truth, not an illusion. And I think that's what we can do, is we can look at the substitutes that we've made in the special love and special hate relationships. You know, the things we're either enamored with or that are temporary or upset with that are also temporary, and realize that those can be the gateways and the master key to unlocking a return to the mind and return to a mindful awareness that each situation is a way to get back to the wholeness we never left.
Absolutely. And you know what I was kind of thinking there when you said temporary? That is a running thread in my life that I so resist. I don't like that things are temporary. And what I mean is, you know, it's everything. It's, you know, I mean, it certainly has to do with special love where, yeah, this person likes me today, but tomorrow they're not going to like me. Or, you know, they're okay with this today, but tomorrow they're going to, you know, they're going to criticize or they're going to send, you know, whatever. They're going to post something on Facebook, whatever. But the other piece of it is that, you know, I feel like, and here again, this has become an awareness for me that when something breaks down, you know, whether or not it's a 20-year-old deck that is finally wearing out or a hot water heater that needs to be replaced or a tooth that needs to be capped, sometimes I find myself getting outrageously angry about that. And, you know,
unlike everyone else on the planet, right?
Yeah, unlike. But what I recognize is it, you know, it is that curriculum. And what I recognize when I just kind of sit with that feeling is, once again, why does that upset me so much? This isn't as much about the money or the inconvenience as it's a reminder that I'm vulnerable. It's a reminder. It's a reminder that I don't feel safe, that I don't feel secure, that all these illusions that I have built, all these, you know, and I don't have one, but I often think of this too. You know, we have these security systems, you know, and then the simplest thing can show us that anything, you know, I mean, I've told this story before how I had a puppy one time and she was just destroying my house and I was just at wit's end and I went out and I bought this really expensive gate and then I spent, you know, an hour installing the gate and I was like, okay, finally, now I've got a place to contain her and this is going to be okay. As soon as I set down the screwdriver, she had been on one side and I was on the other and she just simply hopped over it. And I burst out crying. Because but once again, and unfortunately then I wasn't, of course, miracle student. But once again, it's because, oh my God, my best efforts are for naught. And it was so, I remember that because it was so effortlessly on her part. She just simply looked at it and like, oh, okay. And just like a deer or something, she just hopped over this 4-foot gate. And
I was just thinking about deer and garden fences, yes, having had personal experience with that one too.
Yeah. So, you know, all these things, but they can be our curriculum because even when that's it, I'm breaking down into tears. Oh, my best efforts, they're not going to make me safe or they're not going to work the way I thought. I can just go back in and go, yeah, because you feel vulnerable, you know, and when you think about it metaphysically, or if you get into some of the metaphysics of the course, it's because, yeah, you think you created a better world than God created. I mean, you think you could run away from home, you could escape and you could make something incredible, which yeah, you kind of made something incredible, but then every time it crumbles, every time the illusion fades, every time, you know, you recognize it's not permanent, which once again, I would say real love is permanent. It doesn't change. And what we've made is a fake. And every time we're reminded of that, it's startling.
It's a difficult curriculum to look at the insanity of the ego and see the depth and breadth of its craziness. But I think we get motivated by when our back's against the wall, so to speak, or to use a phrase I just read in the chapter on the 10th plague in Bob Rosenthal's books from Plagues and Miracles. It's like the last plague of the Egyptians in the book of Exodus is they're sort of like, okay, this is the last straw. Okay. I got to do something now. You know, there's nothing left to the ego's strategy that is enticing me or luring me to try to, you know, yet one more failed attempt is not going to cut it kind of thing. So, sometimes we need to, and it appears that we need to, you know, have the last straw or the breaking point kind of thing hit, but we can, I think over time learn to anticipate those and kind of, instead of being blindsided by those back against the wall opportunities, you know, be a little proactive and preemptive and say, okay, I see where I was, you know, contributing to this argument or this dysfunctional situation in terms of my behavior or my thoughts, and see how, you know, we can turn it around and take some action, not necessarily physically, although sometimes it reflects that way, but, you know, do things differently by thinking differently, before those situations become a mess. And even when on the level of form, that's still part of our curriculum, because the ego's curriculum is always to keep us off balance and upset and never completely at peace. There's a reserve that kind of builds up that comes from practicing that forgiveness, curriculum of forgiving ourselves for investing in what doesn't work, over and over enough to where we then, you know, kind of see those things coming, and rather than getting upset about it, we say, oh, well, this is a power failure. I've been through this before. I don't have to get all upset and panic and everything. I can, you know, find the flashlights and the candles and do the things I can do. You know, read from an actual treeware book instead of something online.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Hang up the laundry in the dryer that I forgot to hang up last night. You know, that's what I was finding myself doing this morning. You know, it's like, oh yeah, there's always an alternative that can be, you know, a peaceful set of exercises that has nothing to do with being upset about the current circumstance and seeing that being upset is really the substitute, the shabby substitute that paragraph says is, you know, which is our special love relationship with things being a certain way, whether it's utility power or jobs or relationships or health situations or whatever. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it always goes back to that lesson number 5. I'm never upset for the reason I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I could see peace instead of this, which I think is number 34. And, mm-hmm. But that's what's amazing is when I find myself just having this total meltdown, I'm like, yeah, this is, you know, I know why I'm upset, you know, because I feel vulnerable and or because look at what I've created and it's just, you know, how come I keep messing it up?
That's right.
Oh my God. Talk about trading one illusion for another, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's it, isn't it? And I think, that, you know, the more we recognize it, the more our spiritual, psychological muscle, if you will, gets strengthened. And we may still, you know, listen to the ego and identify with it, but maybe not quite as long. Maybe instead of 3 days, we give it 2 days and 23 hours the next time. And then at some point, maybe it's only 2 minutes and 23 seconds instead of 3 minutes, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
And eventually it's a fairly quick thing. It's like, oh, there it is again. There's that ego enticement to get upset and to fly off the handle and, you know, make a big deal and a big fuss out of whatever circumstance. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we don't say things. It doesn't mean we stuff it or, you know, suppress an appropriate response, whether not like in my case, when the power went off, I looked up the power outage number and I put in the automated, you know, yes, this is the residence that has the power outage. And it's like, okay, good. Now I did what I needed to do, but I wasn't like fuming or anything while it was going on. I was like, okay, I just, you know, punch in the numbers and go do the next thing. And, you know, it's like, this is not, and when I remember to do it that way, I realize my peace of mind is not affected by the circumstance. Inconvenience perhaps, but when we recognize that our true innermost peace of being and peace of mind has nothing to do with what's happening or not happening in the world, that's, I think, when we have those, you know, glimpses above the battleground duality, above the warfare, you know, the war zone of special love and special hate, seesawing back and forth, and it's like, oh, there's got to be a better way, and that way is the peace that's beyond either of those shabby substitutes.
Yes, and you know, before we run out of time here, I also just want to reiterate about special love and special hate. Because I think, and of course I think this as a person, I think this as an astrologer as well, but you know, when we approach love, when we approach these relationships that we have with other people, I think the more cognizant we can be of the fact that we're not so altruistic as we want to believe. In other words, we really are looking for somebody to meet our needs. We are looking for somebody else to make us feel good, to buoy us up. And I think we don't believe that, but I think on a very spiritual level, we truly are. We believe there's something missing. And so we're trying to find that missing piece. We're trying to find the twin flame. We're trying to find the soulmate. We're trying to find the person who, in the words of the Course, is temporarily going to give us haven from the storm. And I think the more that we can recognize that that's what we're doing, then we really will choose more appropriate relationships. And maybe we will just kind of stand back and laugh when we feel disappointed or when something doesn't work out quite the way we wanted it to. Because it's like, well, yeah, I was putting a pretty heavy burden on that person.
Oh, yeah.
And then they fail.
You know? Yeah, that is a tremendous insight, Lucia, because I think that's, When you recognize how much of a burden that puts on you and the other person, the expectations that we have, it doesn't mean that, you know, we don't, you know, try to, you know, get along and do the things that are helpful. But I think it's with the expectations and noticing when we have an investment in the outcome one way or the other of any situation and see how destructive that is to our peace of mind. That becomes, you know, a huge insight. And it helps us, like you say, see that really the devastating and seemingly despicable, but ultimately nothingness of our egos. Because it really looks, you know, ugly, nasty, mean, and awful when we look at it through the eyes of the ego, because that's the self-concept the ego has. That's the only assessment it can make of anyone or anything. And so it treats the little s self that we think we are and with the same, you know, disdain and disrespect as it does everyone else. But that's not what we really are. And we can come from a place, having looked at that and looked at the you know, what's behind the what's in it for me, special love, and then seeing the oh, I'm going to be upset behind that of the special hate. If you don't behave or you know, perform in X, Y, Z kind of ways, then there's the opportunity to actually relate, without those expectations, you know, still doing probably the same things. So I think that's why that, you know, again, that section of, you know, are changes required in our lives. No, you know, we can continue to have the same job, the same relationships, the same family situations, you know, whatever. And it's very rare that, you know, that our spiritual curriculum makes us make, you know, dramatic changes in anything, because it's really all about the mind. And that's really where it needs to happen. And it may manifest or result in changes in the form, but then we get reminders all the time that that isn't what is the cause, that's the effect. And when we're not getting the feedback loop backwards and thinking that what's outside is the cause, we can afford to be at peace, because we realize that the choice for peace is always in our mind at every moment and not appendage to anything that's happening or not happening outside us.
Right. Well, and as an added note, I would just say, I don't want to ever basically make somebody feel like, well, you've got to stay in this relationship because, you know, you created it, or, you know, I mean, once again, there's preferences. We have preferences.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of got into this relationship, but this isn't working out for me, and I think I'm going to do something else. That's perfectly legitimate. But I do think the more we can be very aware that we're trying to get our needs met, and basically what we're saying is this person isn't doing a good job, then we'll choose better relationships, or we'll choose more loving or more satisfying interactions with people when we're a little bit more attuned to what we're really doing.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I'm hoping that's true, Bruce.
I think so. I think it actually expands our realm of opportunities mentally when we're no longer constrained, you know, like a tourniquet on the mind of thinking, well, I'll be happy if these constraints and conditions are met. And when you stop and look at all the constraints and conditions that the ego has, and all the must-haves and the must-not-be-haves, you know, it's a pretty damn long list.
Yes.
and having freed ourselves up from adhering blindly to our peace being contingent on things being on the must-have, must-not-have lists, you know, frees us up to consider options that we wouldn't even be considered by, you know, an ego slave.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, and I'm looking at the clock, and I'm so thankful that you had enough power in your cell phone battery to do the show today. And I hope
yeah.
that we'll be back on soon, or maybe that you have an alternate way to charge that phone back up. But do you want to make any announcements before we close the show today?
You know, I think it's probably kind of the generic ones are appropriate, I always like to remind people about the Foundation for Inner Peace website, which is acim.org, and its kind of sister organization, which is the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, and its website is facim.org. And then I have a little blog about course-related stuff, and on which I post things such as these conversations that you and I are having right now. And I've been talking recently with Jackie Laura Jones and Bob Rosenthal, and quite some time with Susan Dugan and several others, and post those kind of conversations, both audio and video, on acimblog.com. So, and I always appreciate these opportunities to chat with you, Sia, because like anything else, it reminds me of stuff I need to practice more fully. So if repetition is a good thing, then you know, every time we talk, we seem to cover the same ground, but we cover it from maybe just a little different angle, and the things you say trigger things that's like, oh yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
and hopefully vice versa, and then for all the listeners that are you know, resonating with what we're sharing and finding it useful and helpful, hopefully. So, anyway,
well,
thank you.
And you're right. I feel like I'm a slow learner. And just like what you put in an email to me, you said that you had been rereading text, you know, chapter 16. And you said, it's amazing what the author has added since the last time I read it. And so that's it. It's like, yeah, I think I know this. And then I reread it, or we have the discussion again. And yes, in many ways, it's repetitive, but it needs to be in order for me to get it.
Exactly. I think it's the repetition that helps us to generalize and to really integrate it, make it ours, rather than just a would be nice kind of concept, and to you know, apply it in a very practical way. And it is an extremely practical course, because, you know, as it reminds us, peace of mind is not a little gift.
That's right. Peace of mind is not a small gift. So, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, CA.
And we'll talk again in a month. And, I mean, we'll talk in between then, too, but we'll be back on the air in a month. And so I want to also thank everybody who's listening today and everybody in the chat room for your comments. That's always fun to see what you're talking about during the show. And remember, you know, you can always ask questions, too. Not now, because the show is over, but you can ask questions as we're together next month as well. So thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver, for being here today. And I hope all of you will stay tuned for the shows that are coming up later today. Right after me, there's more live programming here on Fridays. And also, we're having a big sale on, Thank God It's Friday sale, I think, over on 1-2-Listen. So you will find me there most of the day. I have a few appointments, but otherwise I'm planning on being over there most of the day and also tomorrow. So please come find me there if you want to talk about A Course in Miracles or astrology or tarot or anything else that's going on in your life. I'll be there for you. So everybody, thanks a lot for being here today. And this is CA signing out. You have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about special relationships.